AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Commodity markets are generally on the defensive this morning, although corn and wheat futures are mixed. Crude oil sharply lower, and the Dow and the S&P 500 solidly lower. Money is generally flowing in one direction, and that is away from risk. We'll see if some of that money is finding its way into the machinery collector's market.
Live from the coldest day so far this week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Darren Kopic from the Ag Retailers Association. Then it's Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. And later, Katie Savinelli from Syngenta on behalf of the Be Sure campaign. Right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much, buddy. Yeah, the coldest day so far this week is
so
what
far.
It looks like. Yeah, freeze warning.
So far. My phone says freeze warning, yeah.
Oh, boy. And we look further out, the next 10 days, there's a lot of low 50s for highs in northeast Iowa. You look at some of the conditions that exist further north and to the west of us, it's going to be tough to get things rolling before we get to the 1st of May. And it's feeling later and later. It's feeling like it is going to be a market factor, a bigger market factor than what it is right now. And corn is torn this morning. We've got a market that is trading mixed with some strength in the some light strength in the nearby contracts, some light pressure in the back month contracts. I think that market is still seeing some follow through to the spread action that we had last week. Weather will become a bigger factor for us this week. We'll get an update on that as quickly as we can.
And here's the thing, you know, it's one thing to get into a nice hot shower, right? And you're soaping up, you're singing a little song, you lose track of time, and pretty soon the hot water runs out on you. We've all experienced this.
Sure.
It's a whole nother matter to get into like a lukewarm shower or like the water's just sort of room temperature or even less. That's horrible.
Oh,
now, think of that feeling. That's how the soil feels right now.
It is chilly. It is chilly. There is no question
no
about it.
No songs to be sung. No suds.
Right.
None of it.
There's no lingering to be had.
No. This is cold. Get in and get out.
Get in, get out.
I don't want this to be happening to me right now.
That's right.
That's how I feel.
So, but that's what we've got ahead of us. I don't think there's any question. All right, man. We got a lot of ground to cover. Let's get to the news.
Chip, Ukrainian officials acknowledged that Russian forces seized 42 small towns in their initial drive to seize eastern Ukraine. A senior Russian military official said Russia aims to take full control of not just eastern Ukraine, but also the south. Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly video address, quote, "This only confirms what I said many times. The Russian invasion of Ukraine was intended only as a beginning," end quote. Chip, nearly half of Mariupol has suffered grave damage, and satellite images showed that 90% of ruined buildings were residential, Chip.
Yeah, and some of the satellite images are showing that mass grave outside of Mariupol, and it's heartbreaking.
Well, beginning April 28, Indonesia plans to ban exports of palm oil, widely used in cooking and packaged foods, in a move that may well push up global food prices even further. Indonesia's president said he wanted to ensure that the cooking oil remains abundant and affordable at home, where prices have rocketed, and we're probably going to see the impacts of this on the soy oil market. Fair?
Yeah. Well, I think definitely. The thing that changed on this is they excluded a ban of crude palm oil exports. So that's lessening the impact. That's part of the reason why crude oil futures, excuse me, not crude oil futures, soybean oil futures are more than 200 points lower this morning.
Well, Shanghai reported its highest number of daily COVID-19 deaths in the current outbreak as the city's strict lockdown measures entered their fourth week. Chip, the city recorded 39 fatalities for Saturday, up from 12 the previous day. Meanwhile, more COVID clusters were found in Beijing over the weekend, with the city's Communist Party chief describing the situation as, quote, urgent and serious. Chinese stocks suffered their worst sell-off in more than 2 years, and the yuan hit its lowest level since late 2020 last week. Chip, this seems a little draconian for the number of fatalities going on here.
Well, it's part of the Xi policy, the zero COVID. It's going to have a bigger impact than just in China going forward. And we're seeing how they're reacting to some of the food shortages there now because they can't get product and goods moved around.
Right. Well, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg is among the Biden administration officials which are expected to appear at a Tuesday Surface Transportation Board hearing. The two-day hearing will also include railroad executives. Representatives from labor organizations will also speak during the event. Unions previously complained that rail delays are due to freight railroad operators, including Union Pacific, cutting employees. We reported on UP cutting fertilizer shipments, and this is the hearing we probably need on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to talk with Darren Kopic about it here in just a bit.
Congestion at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach worsened in March, ending three straight months of improvement. That we've got renewed calls for green jet fuel. And the Colorado River losing water could be a problem for farmers in Arizona and nearby urban centers.
Absolutely, it could be. Those calls for green jet fuel, the ASFs, we talked about that quite a bit last week on the morning show. So pay attention to that. That's going to be making some progress in a hurry. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, MAMWX.com. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Chip. How are you?
We're doing real fine, real fine. Except we've still got these cool temperatures, freeze warning for us tonight here in Northeast Iowa.
I tell you, man, yeah, we do, and you know, this isn't it. I still think another strong cold front there the end of the first week of May is in the cards here. So we've got a little bit of time left yet to work through these cold temps.
Well, you've been talking about tonight's cold temperatures for about 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks, Michael. We were set up to have this. How long do these cold temperatures, cooler than normal temperatures, stick around?
I think it's through the first, 15 days of May. I think after that, the pattern is going to start changing to a warmer pattern. At least, I still think the activity remains amped up. We're fighting. It's going to be difficult to find a 7-day window to get out into the field with perfect weather right now. And I think that's going to happen until, right now, at least mid-May, with both rain and cold front risks in the picture there.
Okay. Is that what you mean by activity remains ramped up? We'll continue to see some of the showers across the Midwest?
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Severe weather. It's something. Well, no, I'm going to go away from severe weather. Let's go straight to the winds, Michael. My gosh, is there any relief coming?
Not anytime soon. I mean, in our latest 3 to 7 day hazards, we've got a very windy period in the Central Plains, and until these storm systems can stop developing and hanging around, it's going to continue to be very, very windy for some time. So I know that's a frustrating element to deal with, and it's going to sting around for a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's all kind of frustrating in here. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate you, man. Thanks. All right, that's Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Just go to BAMWX.com. Check it out. All right, Davis and I will be right back.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Chip. Welcome back. Yes, Davis.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I interrupted you. He was going to say welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Shout out to our anonymous friend on her way to the Cedar Rapids Airport this morning. Just got a text. Hello, you know who you are. Drive safely. Enjoy your trip. I don't know where she's going, but she's going somewhere.
Outstanding.
She's listening this morning.
Excellent. Hi. Yeah,
somebody's listening.
Yay.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yes, welcome back. Glad that you are with us. I'm Chip. That is Davis.
Hello.
Lots and lots of logistics and supply chain issues, and we've got a hearing that is going to be happening this week in D.C., Secretary Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, and other Biden administration officials will be testifying at this hearing, and they're going to be talking about getting the rail service back up to where it needs to be. And joining us now to have a conversation about what kind of impact it's having on ag retailers is Darren Kopic. He is the president and CEO of the Ag Retailers Association. Darren, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, glad that you are here, Darren. Okay, before we talk about what's happening this week, let's talk about some of the recent happenings that have gotten us to the point that we're at here this morning. For me, it started with a press release from CF Industries stating that immediately they had lost 20% of the rail space through the Union Pacific Railway. It was a UP decision. What prompted that decision, Darren?
Well, our understanding is that UP is trying to deal with their bottlenecks in rail service and delays across their network by scaling back what they will serve for some of their largest customers. There were something like 30 customers that got a similar kind of a note that CF did, including a handful of fertilizer shippers. And for us, it's just another example of how railroads exercise their monopoly power, cut across existing contracts without regard for how important it is for timely fertilizer deliveries this time of year, and just do whatever they want. And so we've been after the STB, Surface Transportation Board, to do some revisions to what's allowed and what's proper. And hopefully we're going to actually be able to make some traction on that issue in the coming weeks.
Okay. You said it affected more than just CF Industries. How many companies did you say? 30 other companies?
Yeah, there were 30 Union Pacific customers that got similar nasty grams from the railroad. Our understanding is that some of those may have been able to go back to UP and negotiate a little flexibility so that it may not be a total 20% loss. But still, it's going to be significant, even if it's some number less than 20, especially at this time of year when the railroads are already behind delivering fertilizer.
Right, right. Couldn't have come at the worst time. What's been the reaction from the members of the ARA?
Well, everybody's already scrambling to get material, and so this is going to make it that much more difficult. But in addition to pointing out the monopoly power of the railroads, what it also does is point out the importance and right now our lack of access to competitive sources of supply from imports. So in the case of UAN, especially in California, but also on the East Coast, those markets are typically supplied by 75, maybe even 85% imported product for UAN in a normal year. Now we've got tariffs in place because of a petition, and those imports from Trinidad, Tobago, and Russia, which we'll get into that one, but those imports are barred from the marketplace. So those markets on the East and West Coast are totally dependent on domestic suppliers who are going to have trouble supplying the market in the first place, Now this UP announcement is going to make it even more difficult.
So does that divert supply out of the Midwest to the coast then?
I don't know. I suspect that the CF and the shippers will send it to the place where they can get the best economic return. But I suspect that what it will do is really tighten markets and probably inflate prices in the coastal markets.
Yeah. Holy smokes. It couldn't have happened at a worse time. Outside of fertilizer, is this having an impact on any other segments of ag retail?
That's the biggest one at the moment. I mean, crop protection has had challenges also from anything from importing technical from China to getting products positioned in the marketplace, getting formulators ready to go. But what I hear most often from retailers is this concern about fertilizer.
Okay. What do you hope happens at this Surface Transportation Board hearing that's happening this week?
Well, we're part of a coalition called the Ag Transportation Working Group that sent in a letter last Friday with some specific suggestions. Some of those are just doing things to increase competition, competitive switching types of proposals. But there was one in there that suggested that, you know, the railroads charge our members demurrage when we don't have a crew on site to unload their car that they deliver at 12 midnight on Saturday night. Maybe there are some ways to turn that around. And if a railroad doesn't deliver things on time or doesn't efficiently handle private cars, maybe there's a way for shippers to charge the railroad demurrage so that thing works both ways. So there are several things that we've suggested, and I'm hoping that we finally get some traction with the hearing tomorrow and Wednesday to move this ball forward.
How well do you think Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg understands, I don't want to say it's a desperate situation, but the gravity of the situation that we're dealing with in farm country and getting product delivered?
You know, we've not had any direct conversations with the secretary about this. Coming from a state with a lot of agriculture like Indiana, I hope he's got at least some kind of a feel for it. But this is really going to be in front of the Surface Transportation Board, which is a kind of an independent organization.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the Secretary of Transportation will have a whole lot of influence on what the answer is.
Okay. All right. What would you like? Well, let's go to that one, because we've got Buttigieg, we've got Landrieu, we've got Vilsack running around the country talking about the infrastructure projects that are going to be getting started or starting. And the whole time that's dealing with something in the future, but there's an issue that needs to be dealt with right now. And that is cleaning up some of the supply chain kinks that we've got in the system. What would you like to see Buttigieg doing here?
Well, there have been some things that we've been working on for a number of months about the transportation issues to expand the ag exemption, air mile radius, to expand the ag hours of service exemptions and apply those across farm inputs, not just selected categories. So there are several things that the DOT could do. You mentioned the infrastructure proposal, and we were solidly in support of that, and it's an investment that needs to happen. What concerns us now is that the administration has undone the NEPA reforms that the prior administration did that makes that process more efficient. So now we're going to go back to a whole series of environmental reviews and analyses that have to happen before these projects can stick a shovel in the ground. I'm afraid it's going to delay the infrastructure that we so badly need and everybody's expecting and hoping for, because we're going back to that old system.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of an eyebrow raiser last week that the retailers got when the FBI put out a warning saying, hey, watch out for the cyber attacks and the ransomware the ransomware attacks.
Yeah. You know, it's sometimes you look at what's going on out there and you go, man, there are some sick people in this world.
Yeah.
We had some members that got hit by cyber attacks last year, even, and had one of them on our program at our annual conference, kind of sharing lessons learned about here's how we found out about it. Here's how we had to clean up the mess. Here's what we've done to prevent it. But I think the warning is well advised. And unfortunately, these folks seem to hit at the time that we're most vulnerable, which is now during fertilizing and planting, and then perhaps into harvesting this summer as well.
Yeah. Okay. chemical availability. What are you hearing from your members, Darren? Are we getting product in position?
It's not as bad as what some people say it is. I think the trick now isn't going to be so much total quantity as in who actually holds that quantity. So it might be that the usual channel from, you know, formulator to distributor to retailer might have enough product in some cases, might not. Might be that some of the other players in the marketplace, internet companies and so on, may have been able to get a supply of some particular chemical, and nobody else is having much luck finding it. So from what I'm hearing, yeah, there'll be a few products that are on allocation and short supply, but at least as big a question is, if there's supply out there, who has it and how do I get it?
Right. Okay. Well, good luck at the STB hearing this week, Darren, tomorrow, and hopefully we can unkink some of the kinks that still remain in the supply chain. Thank you for making time for us today.
You bet. Happy to be here. Thank you.
All right. That is Darren Kopic. He is the president and CEO of the Ag Retailers Association. Okay. You guys are not going to believe the note that I got from Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. You ready for this? The highest auction price ever on a tractor. We've got the details next, right here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, they're leaning on the soy complex and soybeans in particular. What's going on?
Well, really, soy oil has been under heavy pressure in Indonesia. Late last week, they said they were going to ban exports. It doesn't include crude palm oil, though. So that really hammered the soy oil market overnight at the end of the overnight session, and that's continuing on through daytime trade, putting pressure on soybeans as well, which is also weighing on the meal market. So soy complex is under heavy pressure here to open up the week.
Yeah, and that's despite some confirmation of some export sales to China. What, over almost 470,000 metric tons of new crop beans, 66,000 tons of old crop beans for delivery to China. Some decent demand still in the market. What about corn and wheat? Kind of mixed trade here this morning. Well,
the wheat,
I just saw SRW.
Yeah, wheat market's starting to give up. So they traded to the upside a little bit early on and just couldn't find sustained buyer interest. And now they've softened quite a bit here with SRW leading us down. And the spillover pressure is weighing on the corn market, though just modest gain, okay, or modest losses at the moment.
Take us to those big losses in the livestock trade.
Yeah, so last Friday's USDA reports cattle on feed and cold storage were bearish for cattle and beef, and that's putting heavy pressure on the live cattle market this morning, so they gapped lower. Now, the feeder cattle, they're following live cattle lower despite the mild weakness in the corn market, right, and then hog futures. They're giving up as well and facing heavy selling pressure here this morning.
Yeah, hopefully we can get a bit of a recovery. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Machine repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
You know, jump is probably pretty appropriate here for machine repeat, isn't it, Davis? Don't you think?
I think so. As I understand, the highest price ever on something.
Ever. That's right.
What you would say is that the price jumped.
Jumped.
Is that what you're
beautiful.
Going for?
Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, joins us right now. Welcome back, everyone. let's get to the conversation with Greg right now. Greg, welcome, buddy. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. I got two comments on that Van Halen song of Jump. Yep. One, I believe it was 1984. That's when I graduated high school, so back in the Stone Ages. And two, when I played basketball, I could not jump. So I could shoot, but I couldn't jump. So you're bringing a smile to my face. Memories long ago.
Is that why you decided that the best best path for you was that pasture pool that you love to play so much?
Yeah, past your pool, you play golf. It does not matter how high you can or cannot jump. So, yes, that was a deciding factor in my decision. I'll say that.
Excellent. Okay, we've teased it enough. The highest auction price ever on a tractor is Pete's pick of the week. Let's get the details.
Yeah, it was last, I believe, Thursday night. Our good friends at Amon Vintage Power out of Nokomis, Illinois, Kurt Amon. Very well-known auctioneer on vintage tractors and equipment memorabilia for decades. Kurt and the crew do fantastic job there. And they had a sale. They were, I think it was billed as a pre-30 auction. So, I mean, tractors, a lot of the big prairie tractors from the early 1900s, pre-1930. And on the sale, guys, they had a 1913 Case 3060. It had been restored over the decades. And, I mean, it just looked fantastic. It sold for $1,470,000, almost $1.5 million. So as far as I can tell, I mean, that's by far and away the highest auction price I've ever seen on a tractor. It's it was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Any clue on the buyer?
Well, I just exchanged a quick Facebook messages with Kurt. I didn't specifically ask him. I heard anecdotally through it might have been the discussion on our Facebook page when I posted it, but I heard the buyer was from Connecticut. I can't confirm that. I think the seller was Dennis Powers, kind of a well-known collector in this very rare tractor, early tractors. And he had a couple others on the sale too. I'd be remiss not to mention there was a Pioneer 3060. Now, if you're not familiar with the Pioneer Tractor Manufacturing Company, I mean, actually got started, I think, 1910. And that tractor sold for $456,750. Jeez. And then there was also a 1919 Twin City 40-65. That thing sold for $493,500. And also a 1909 Gas Traction Big 430. That sold for $210,000. So if you're into these or want more information on these super, you know, start of the tractors, modern tractors, folks, I'd suggest go to Amazon.com and look, just type in Tractor Wars. There was a book written by Neil Dahlstrom. He's actually the archivist for John Deere, John Deere Archives. And we'll actually have a TV special coming up on our Machinery PTV show where I just sit down with Neil and we talk, but He told me the number of companies that were making tractors in the early 1900s. I can't remember the exact number, but it was a huge number. So those were made, you know, way before even John Deere got into the game buying Waterloo gas engines. So dynamic period back then.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful tractor. 169 bids it took to get to $1.47 million.
I heard the bidding. I think the bidding jumped $500,000 in just the last few minutes. Kurt dropped me a note and he said, Pete, you might want to look at this. almost $1.5 million, really something.
Really is. Really is. There is money out there for collector items. And, you know, take a look what you got in the shed. Is the
yes.
bottom line there.
Look around the corner in the back shed. Yeah. And then look twice.
That's right. Pull that tarp.
Yes.
That's been there a while. All right. Let's get to Conquest, Saskatchewan. What you got there?
Well, it was, you know, difficult not to feature a couple of these other ones for pick of the week because, I mean, quite honestly, breathtaking prices. So the day before last week, last Wednesday, online farm auction that Ritchie Brothers had, a Conquest, Saskatchewan, a farm sale. Guy had a 1984 International 5488 mechanical front. Nice looking rig, very sharp. But I mean, hours, it wasn't crazy low. It's 7,755 hours, but it sold for 87,000 Canadian, which, I mean, you convert that to US, it's $69,600. Now, Chip, it's just crazy. I mean, of course, that's a record high price on a 5488, but get this, the record was just set November 30th, right after Thanksgiving last fall.
Of last
it was
year?
It was 51.5. Okay. Sullivan Auctioneers had a sale out of Ogden, Iowa, and that broke a record that was 21 years old, and the previous high was 34,000. So it, in 6 months, you went from 34,000 high to 69.6. So just
call
crazy.
70. Yeah. Call it 70. Call it, doubled the price.
Yeah, he doubled the highest auction price ever in just 4 or 5 months. Unbelievable.
Really is. Man, oh, man. Okay, the big iron auction there at Rockton.
Yeah, same day, last Wednesday. How about this? A 2002 AGCO DT160. Now, this was super unusual. I do not know the backstory. Only had 111 hours on it. Legit, original, you know, like new time machine, an orange time machine, if you've never seen one before.
Yeah.
But it sold for $98,250, and now going in, obviously, we knew this would set a record, but just to give you an idea, folks, the previous high was $53,000, and that was from March 7th of 2006. So, I mean, that was, you know, a couple years old. So, again, here you're almost doubling. So, and again, those two tractors weren't even the pick of the week, so my apologies for not making them pick of the week, but we need picks of the week, I guess.
I guess we do. I guess we do, yeah. That one really seemed – okay, I get it with the hours and everything. But that one, the DT-160,
mm-hmm.
that seems like – I don't know if it's going to be an outlier because we're making new highs all the time in this market, Greg. But that one feels like it's going to be tough to beat for a while.
Yeah, it was interesting in the discussion on it when I posted it. A lot of people actually were thinking that was quite a great deal because, I mean, it's a like new tractor. And if you want that, you know, whatever that, you know, in that mid horsepower range there, I mean, what's a new one cost? And by the way, can you even get it? Plus, of course, you know, your pre-def preacher four. So anyway, yeah, almost 100K, but, yeah, pretty amazing. Now, if I hop to the day before, I sent you a note on this one, Chip, but our great friends at Kiko Auctioneers, they're up out of Northeast Ohio. So again, I've said this market is tough to report on, but now they had two online farm auctions last Tuesday. One was in the afternoon. They set three records, and then they had another evening sale, which we're seeing more of these evening online auctions. And there were three more records. So in the afternoon, they had a John Deere 7405, just about 3,600 hours. That brought 45.5. That beat a record from 14 years ago. And drills, no-till drills, of course, have been just scorching hot. They had a Great Plains 1005 NT 10-footer. That brought $27,000. That was $7,450 over the record. Then they had a Kuhn FC323 GC disc bind, and the hay equipment is just exploding right now. This thing, 10 years old, but it brought 22.5. That was 5K over a record from 11 years ago.
Wow.
So that was the afternoon. Then in the evening, they came back, and if you like vintage corn pickers, how about this one, folks? A new idea, 323 one row brought 68.75. The previous record was $5,000 4 years ago. Then, Chip, imagine how many New Holland 256 hay rakes I've seen sold at auction for 30, 32 years. Okay. Well, We saw one go 10% over the record, sold for $5,500. Record was 8 years ago at 5,000. It just, like I say, they're just clocking in from every direction here. So a good condition used equipment is just, it's just going up by the week.
Yep. Hey, give me about 30 seconds on the machine repeat auction that wrapped up last Tuesday.
Yeah, more record prices. So things like an OH on your 7630 out of Kansas, just under 5,000 hours, went for $80,250, highest auction price ever, over 4,600 hours. We also had a 2013 John Deere 6150M, 2,916 hours at $103,250, highest auction price ever, over 2,300 hours. So same thing, just, you know, good condition used is just exploding higher right now.
Yeah, okay. Big Iron's got a big auction coming up this week.
They do on Wednesday. Some super nice items off an estate sale out of Pierre, South Dakota. They've got a 2008 John Deere 8430, 2,772 hours. That could be red hot. And then a 2013 John Deere 6140D with under 930 hours on it. So I think we're going to see strong prices Wednesday on our friends at BigIron.com on that sale.
Yeah. You know, the afternoon / evening auction thing adds an element that I hadn't really thought about before, but closing the auctions when guys don't have got time. They're not out working in the sunlight. They're, it's creative,
Finish your dinner, have a beer or two, and click that bid button, I guess, huh?
Keep clicking. You can't get it if you don't click. great stuff, man. Great stuff. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Chip.
All right. We are talking about the Be Sure campaign next here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet and hashtag AgriTalk.
Davis, welcome back.
Yes.
Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis, the conversation that we had with Michael Clark at the start of the show, we've got some delays that are out there that are happening when it comes to field work. And based on his forecast, it certainly feels like those delays are going to continue, which means that the window to get what needs to get done this spring is getting more narrow, not wider. And it means that it's going to be tempting to take some shortcuts. But when it comes to product management, shortcuts are the wrong way to go. It's time to learn more about the Be Sure campaign. Joining us is Katie Savinelli. She is the stewardship team and pollinator lead at Syngenta. Katie, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
It's great to talk with you again. And, you know, as I think about today, I think they must be doing some corn planting in the Midwest. So this is perfect timing to have this conversation.
It certainly is. Now, tell us about this year's Be Sure campaign.
Well, we're really excited because this Be Sure campaign has been continuing year after year, and we've been expanding it across the United States. And so we're continuing to talk about best management practices as it relates to both planting practices as well as making foliar applications later in the season. And the good thing about it is that the Midwest has really embraced this. We've talked to a lot of different people outside of the radio show, and we really want to make sure that everyone's following these practices because, you know, it's been a year and people forget in a year, at least I do. Yeah. And so it's always good to remind everybody what to do and how best to ensure that you can plant your crop, but not cause any harm to bees.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So you mentioned the best management practices. What are some quick tips that farmers and applicators can use?
Well, let's start with planting, because planting's happening right now. When the farmers are planting, the best thing to do is, number one, read the label first and make sure you not only read the label, but also the seed tag, because there's information on the seed tag. When planting, especially with the vacuum planters, use a lubricant, because a lubricant certainly keeps the corn plants, gets through the system without causing a lot of dust. And dust is really the concern that we have relative to blowing off the field. And then the other thing to remember, too, is if there is a seed spill, which is typically sometimes in the beginning of the turn rows, cover those seeds up, because we don't want, you know, birds or other wildlife to be eating it. So that's really important.
So cover it up, clean it up, do it right. I think that's very important. Katie, when we talk about the seeds and making sure that we're doing things right, what kind of information can we find on the labels?
One of the main pieces of information is whether or not it can cause harm to bees. Now, even if it can cause harm to bees, that's why we have practices in place so that you're minimizing any potential harm. The other important information is, number one, how do you store the product? How do you dispose of the product? What to do at the end of the season when you're finished with everything? How to clean up? And all these things are really important.
That's right. So we're talking about the Be Sure campaign with Katie Savinelli from Syngenta. Katie, what are some ways that farmers and beekeepers can work together throughout the growing season?
Number one, I think it's really important for farmers to know where the beekeepers are located. More often than not, a lot of beekeepers will actually ask farmers if they can put their bees on the land that they're, because a lot of times they'll have flowers and other things planted. So it's really important to have this good open communication with the beekeepers and understanding when planting is going to be happening. Also understanding later in the season when they're going to be making foliar applications. So that communication is number one. The other part is really, let's say the bees are in a certain location and there's not protection for them, because a lot of times farmers will say, why don't you stick them behind these trees? Because if the wind's blowing in that direction, the trees will protect the bees. So they have a lot of discussions around that. And there's also things, and it depends on which state you're in, it's Drift Watch as well as Bee Check. And both of these tools are, you know, apps now. It's private. The farmer can locate, you know, put their farm in there. The beekeepers can put where their bees are. It's really, no one has that access except for the people that are on the app. And it's all private. But it allows the farmers, if he doesn't know where the bees are, to say, okay, the bees are, let's say, you know, a mile away from my farm, and I can at least let them know what's happening, or at least be careful.
Yeah. Communicate. I love that. That's really good. Katie, I know that this is something that you're very passionate about. What does it mean to you personally that your company, Syngenta, is part of the Be Sure campaign?
I was actually one of the founding members of the Be Sure campaign, so I have a lot of pride that we've been so successful. But why it's important to me is because I want farmers to be able to have a wide variety of tools, and because they really need them for resistance management, for crop protection, for a lot of different things. But I also want the pollinators to be safe. And I think there's a good balance between the two. So farmers can farm and beekeepers can keep their bees safe. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about honeybees as being kind of the primary bees, but a lot of the practices that we're supporting also helps with a lot of the other, let's say, native bees. And native bees are typically outside of the field anyway, but still making sure that the dust isn't moving in their direction is also important. So it's not just bees, it's also bees and also butterflies. But butterfly season's a little bit early right now, especially probably in the Midwest. Yeah.
Right. Where do we go to learn more information?
Visit growingmatters.org/besure.
Excellent. Thank you, Katie. That's Katie Savinelli, Stewardship Team and Pollinator Lead at Syngenta. Davis, Katie made a really important point there towards the end of that conversation when she said, you know, basically what she said, if farmers as a whole do things right, you know, put those best management practices to work, use the crop protection product safely and responsibly, that there will be more tools available for crop protection in the future, not less. And boy, with the resistance issues that keep popping up on different things, Davis, we got to have more tools. we don't want to back ourselves into a corner where the rules and regulations and restrictions become so stringent that we lose access to some of the crop protection products that are out there and available to us right now. The other thing, if you're not sure, Katie's made it pretty clear, if you're not sure how to use a product, it's on the label. Check it out. It's going to be right there. And then communicate with your farmer neighbors and your beekeeping neighbors. Let them know what you are doing, when you are doing it. And everybody should find a way to get along if we keep those communication lines open. All right. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Appreciate it. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing.